First of all, I think I'm going to end up probably giving this a little bit longer than I anticipated, because my wife is going back to teaching first to the high school girls. So I'd probably end up giving this class closer to February, which is, yeah, I'm sorry. I know I cannot replace my wife. I fully admit that, but I'm going to try my best. But it's a good opportunity for a different angle. You know, somebody asked me recently, and I mentioned this to the men, if I had to pick one focus, like what I would say for the shul, what a goal for the shul is, and or you know, in general, what the angle I would want. And for those who've heard me speak enough, I would have to say that my greatest motif, in a million different ways, is not to be mediocre. That in life, it's very, very easy to be mediocre. And a danger is that you get caught up in a lifestyle and you're satisfied, which means I became an Orthodox Jew. So I'm done. You know, like, you're Orthodox. For example, you can say you became Hasidic, Yeshivish. I learned in Lakewood. I'm Chabad, I'm Samer. This kind of Orthodox, I'm done. I put on a hat. I wear a shetel. I dress religious. I have a nice Jewish name. Game over. And certainly that's not what life is about. Wherever we are in life, wherever we're holding in life, life, Torah, is supposed to be constantly being a better person. Being better between man and man, being better between man and Hashem. Or in this place, between woman and woman, and between woman and Hashem. Between woman and man, we'll have protective
fences. It's a different
class. Yes. But being better really means every day in life, looking to be a better person. You know, can somebody just close that door, please? Usually I love to hear the words of Torah, but...
Not when you're giving them over now.
Right. And this is a challenge. I'll tell you why it's a challenge. Because usually in life, we're very, very busy. Not only very busy, but there's a certain law of inertia. And that law of inertia makes people just want to stay the way they are. And we all have areas where we want to be better. And we all have areas where... Leave me alone. You know? Just leave me alone. Yeah. And for some people, that area is in levels between man and God, and sometimes the levels between man and man. I know people who are fantastic. They pray. And they're very, very, very careful on kosher. And they're very, very, very careful on Shabbos. And they're very, 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 very tsnius. But they're callous to others or uncaring. Or they're not giving. And other people are super, super nice, super, super friendly, super, super caring, your best friend, but they dress like not a Jewish lady, and they don't really pray, and they don't really feel God. So everyone has different areas. And ultimately, we're all in this world, all in this world, all in this world to be better people. Not better, you know, every 10 years we improve a little, but to make an effort to be better, if not every day, but certainly every week. That means, and we'll see, it's a gradual work in life. But life is, ultimately where our life is supposed to be in this world, is to be Ovdei Hashem. To be people who work on ourselves. You know, there is, as someone who's fortunate to have been around many people who became observant, many people who became religious, I've been involved in many people who have converted. There's a danger when people feel a plateau. You know, I said this to many bar mitzvah boy, many person who got married, many people involved in the conversion. Life has just begun. It has begun. This is the beginning. And the beginning means that you're going to work on yourself throughout life. Moshe Rabbeinu, to the day he died, made an effort to be a better person. All great tzaddikim and tzadkaniyoses made an effort to be better people. So this, when you talk about Musar, Musar is about striving to be better, striving to change, using our free will to be better people, better Jews. So I want to use Rav Volba, Rav Shlomo Volba, was one of the greatest thinkers of the late 20th century. He himself did not grow up observant. He grew up in Switzerland. He ended up marrying a rabbinic dynasty. He married Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's niece, and her father was the Mashkiach of Slobodka Yeshiva. He became a great student in the Mir Yeshiva, and in the late part of the 20th century in Israel, he was the biggest Baal Musar in Eretz Israel. His two classic works are Ali Shor, which are studied in many of the seminaries and yeshivas today. So the way the class is going to go is like this, that, you know, I mentioned this is for committed individuals, right? If you choose to drop out, it won't be personal. But ideally, or more than ideally, you know, by 8:05, people should be here if they're going to come. And because this is all about working on oneself, it's not about, you know, it's not just here getting a Torah lecture. And probably, you know, next week, for those who are going to be continuing, I'm going to ask people to get a partner for this, because when you're working on this class, it's not the type of class where you're just going to do by yourself, but you're going to have a partner, because the point of the class is that somebody is going to work with somebody else to encourage them and to see where they're holding. So, but I will probably read, explain, expound, darshan, elucidate. You know, questions which are pertinent are welcome. Things which are personal, applications, probably better to ask afterwards. Any question that should be something that's for everyone, meaning not just in your life. It should be something that we could all gain from at the table, because if it's something that's personal, we lose attention from everybody else. So, you know, I'm going to probably, if I feel the question is not pertinent to everyone, it doesn't mean it's not a very good question. It could be it's a fantastic question. But since we're in a group dynamic over here, we're going to focus on the group dynamic. So the only question we'll really delve into will be things that will speak to most of us. It may not speak to every one of us, but it'll speak to most of us. So Hamagma HaRishayinu Vinyan HaAdam Hi. The first goal, and we're just leaving the baseline of Torah and mitzvahs. The baseline is all of us in this room are people who are aiming for the baseline of Torah and mitzvahs. Everyone here is a believer. Everyone here wants to be observant Jews. Great. But when you're going to build yourself as an individual, right, he lived in his bo oilam panimi, to make yourself have an internal world. An internal world. What does it mean to have an internal world? Tchilas pnimius hibiratsoin, right, to have desires for good. Internally, it is a difference of a person who, when they're thinking about others, they're thinking of what good can I do to others. When they're thinking about Shabbos, the thought process, their inner world of Shabbos, it's not mechanical. That Shabbos is a reality, right? That kindness is a reality. That when they're walking on the streets, a hecher, a higher person, right, what are they noticing on the street? When they see the sky, when they see trees, right? What they're seeing is a spiritual world. They're seeing a spiritual world. Right? That it's an internal world. When you think about raising children, what do you see in your children? You're seeing that I am raising children of Hashem. Right? It's a spiritual world. An internal world, it's not what other people say. It's a person's own internal world. That is the beginning of the building of an individual, of a man or a lady. So if you have a desire, and then it becomes part of who you are. Bereshis darcho, in the beginning, you, a person gives up on piercing. No one needs to know what you're doing. You're saying Tehillim. Person, you're saying Tehillim. Fantastic. Does anyone here at the table need to know? Well, maybe you're going to inspire them, but there should be a part of us where we're just doing it, just us and Hashem. Nobody needs to know. Just, this is something I do every night. I say Tehillim for, you know, be a nice thing. People heard there's a hurricane today. 3.5 million Jews are in danger. You know, pretty dangerous to be in a flooding. Right? Maybe I would have said Tehillim today. Fantastic idea. Instead of just reading Google News or Yahoo News and seeing all the pictures, like, I saw 622 pictures of how the water looks. to open a tehillim and say tehillim. That could be something what a person does. It could be a person say, you know what, there's a lot of the kindness not being done today, I'll do kindness today. But the ideal world would be not to do it where anybody knows. Because why does someone need to know? It's just between me and Hashem. Between me and Hashem. That's an internal world. Not to do it for any rounds of approvals, not to do it for anything more, but to think spiritually. And the more that we're spiritually inclined, whether it's in kindness, whether it's in modesty, whether it's in fear of Hashem, whether it's loving Hashem, right, the more ideas we'll have, the more ideas we'll have to do it. I was by Mrs. Felsen's father-in-law's Levaya. I happened to have been in New York, and I knew the family. I know the family, so I remember they said by Zev Wolfson, very charitable person. So one of the Maspidim, Moshe Shapiro, said he had chidushim, he had novelties in stucco, in charity. What did that mean? He had created a world of charity. And when you're creating a world of charity, he had ideas how to increase charity, how to figure out new ways to get other people to give, or to help people to maximize giving. Well, if a person's thinking spiritually, right, let's say an easy thing for parents or for marriage, right? The beginning of all spirituality, by the way, if I were at this table, is your marriage. I mean, a house, if you have to pick one area to work on the spiritual world, marriage is the most crucial, because that allows you to connect. So whatever you're going to do, if you're thinking about marriage, you're thinking about children, or you're a community member, right, and you're thinking about community, the more you're thinking about it, the more you're internally connected to it, the more abilities you'll have to have good ways to help, right, the more you come to appreciate it internally. A person appreciates prayer, right, and they're living with prayer. So it's not just that internal world allows things to blossom forth. So let's say all of us, I can imagine all of us, I include myself first and foremost, patience. What a beautiful thing to be patient. Right? I mean, how rich, more enriched our life would be the more patient we are. I want to work on patience. Right? We're going to think about patience. We'll think about being, not getting perturbed when things don't go the way we like. Right? Whether we're stuck in traffic, whether we're sick, some person could be seriously sick, whether someone's didn't invite them, they wanted to be invited, not being perturbed. So how are we going to get to the point where we can take things calmly, happily, patiently? So Rebbe then says that you can have an internal world, but no one think. You can think, let's say patience, you can think from today to 100 years about being patient, or about being a giver, and thinking and talking about it doesn't change you. It says, for example, think great thoughts about doing chesed. Right? We think about being, I'm going to have hundreds of guests. I'm going to have the biggest open house, my house, I'm going to have an open house for people to come for Shabbos lunch, and I'm going to give them the best meals, I'm going to make them comfortable. A good host does, they don't think about what they like for lunch, they think about what the guests like for lunch. I know this person's a vegan. I feel bad for them, but they're vegans. Right? But they're vegan. I'm going to make sure they have all the food that they need. And I know this person, likes this person. So when I invite them, I'll try to get this person to come as well. I'm going to be the best host. But if you don't invite anybody, you never get into action, you're not going to change. Right? You want to work on anger. You can think, I'm not going to be angry. But if you don't take it to concrete, it's not going to happen. So, for example, you can think all about chesed. L'mashal lo yikna alzei midas chesed. B'kin nafshi chesed. Certainly it will help. Making the thought process, thinking about chesed, will start allowing you to put it into your mind. But if you don't start giving, start doing external deeds, you're not going to affect your internal world enough. Right? So ultimately, if you want to change yourselves, you need two things. We need to think about it, to talk about it, to ponder how personally we're going to work on ourselves. But if you want to actually change, we have to concretize things. It's not enough to talk about charity or doing chesed. It's not enough to talk about being patient. We have to do exercises in being patient. Hey, the goal of Musar is to change ourselves. Hey, we can talk about prayer. I mean, the best way to work on prayer is by praying. Now, if you have to know how to pray, you have to know how to work on prayer. But if you don't pray, your prayer is never going to get better. You don't talk to Hashem, you're not going to get better. I keenly remember, when I was in law school, I brought a boy who had been a counselor in a reform camp and grew up in Pennsylvania. His family's probably getting lots of phone calls for votes right now in the rural Pennsylvania. maybe, or they're running from the hurricane, something of the sort. And, you know, grew up completely reform. So this is unbelievable. He had spent one Shabbos with an Orthodox Jew in his whole life. And he ended up coming to me numerous times, and he's almost observant now. I mean, completely changed. I mean, this is quite a few years ago. So I remember the first time he comes to me for Shabbos. He says to me, "When are we playing Monopoly?" I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, don't you play, everyone plays, once someone talks Shabbos, isn't Monopoly part of, like, Shabbos?" So I said, you never had Shabbos. So the funny thing is in the middle of Shabbos, he tells me, "So this is all very nice, but I can never do this." So I said to this boy, I said, "Let me tell you something. If you would come 3 weeks straight, keep Shabbos 3 straight weeks, you keep Shabbos your whole life. You'd have a shot to keep Shabbos. You'd see that you can do it. Come 3 straight weeks. He didn't do it, by the way. So he's still on the slow path. But if the point is you can talk about Shabbos. Right? You could want to keep Shabbos. People tell me, I've had meetings recently, I love to keep Shabbos. So come for a few weeks, you'll keep Shabbos completely. Now, from beginning to end, then you'll have to be able to do it. It will become part of you. It will become part of you. But if you're always going to start driving halfway, doing things partially, it's very, very hard to really change. So if you talk about something and you don't do it, you don't come to do it, you're not going to change yourself. Right? If you want to be the patient person, it's not enough to just want to be patient. It's not enough to just talk about being patient. You got to do exercises which are going to increase patience. Right? To change oneself, right, it has to be to the external world. Even though we want to blossom the internal world, which is the crucial world, our feelings, our thought process, but the external world is what allows us to change. For example, the Rambam, Maimonides, says the following. If you have $100, okay, you have $100, and you want to give it to charity. Everything being equal, is it better to give $100 at once or $1 for 100 straight days? Now, there are times it's better to give $100 at once, the post can explain, because you can make the major impact. Right? And like, if you ever want to build something, you can't get dollars. You need impact. So there's an importance of giving majorly, because that your impact is greater. However, at some level, you're always going to be giving consistently. Because the Rambam says like this, if you give 100 times $1 a day, you became a giver. Right? The act of giving, even though it's the same dollar amount, right? The act of giving consistently changes you. If you want to be a person, for example, who is hospitable, you're not hospitable right now. Some people, it's natural. Some people have better living quarters, so it's easier. But let's say you could. Right? So you invite a guest for Shabbos once. Well, that's not going to change you. If you do it 30 straight weeks, that would change you. Right? That will change you. Now again, we're going to discuss now how you do this. It doesn't mean that you go full force in anything. But if you want to become a person who's more inclined in a certain way, it can't just be in the world of talk, in the world of thoughts. There are people who think about things all the time. A person told me recently, "I would love to be calm." And I believe the person. I would love to be calm. Who doesn't want to be calm? Do you know any of these things would change our lives for the better? Well, if you would love to be calm, then you got to work on it. It can't just be you would love to be calm. It can't just be that you even read, you know, self-help books. We live in the world of self-help books today. You know, people love self-help, and they're very good. I've read many of them. I've used some of them in my lectures. They're fantastic. But you know what? You could read 1,000 self-help books and not change an iota because you're just reading about it and not doing it. More important, ultimately, in change than reading is actually application. Okay? And that's what this is going to be about, how we take what's here to make it real. You know, Avraham Avinu, which is last week's parsha, Chazal tells us that Avraham got at age 3. He only became observant at age 48. He recognized God at age 3, became observant 48. So the Bali Musa asked, "What took him so long?" So to get from here to the world of these could take a long time. Okay? So if that, so Ravola now talks about when you're working on yourself, when you're going to work on these, now we'll see that you can't work everything at once. It doesn't work for anybody. But he gives a mashal. You know, there's an ancient Greek, not only in Greece, in Babylonia, they used to have this mythology, if we can call it that, about a boat going between the two cliffs to the straits, and on both sides, sometimes there's mermaids in this mythology. What's that? Well, that's when the boat crashes, right? Because they take the attention, they hypnotize them. But there's this image of a boat going through between two cliffs, right? Between these two cliffs, you need a great captain to maneuver the boat between these two cliffs. So Rabola says, when you're learning Musar and you're working on yourself, right? Self-growth is a little bit like that. There's dangers on both sides. There's a danger. What's danger number one? Danger number one is rebellion. Rebellion. Which means as follows. There's a natural instinct in people. The liberals are great at screaming personal autonomy. Personal autonomy. What is personal autonomy? It means don't tell me to do with my body, myself. It happens to be personal autonomy. It applies to God as well for many people. Right? I don't want to come to wake up early for davening. Right? I remember somebody told me once, I was talking about, like, I once saw even a sociological study. This is unbelievable. So this sociologist said, he's talking about Orthodox Jews versus secular Jews. Here's typically the way that sociologists differentiate between Orthodox and Orthodox Jews is Shabbos. If you keep Shabbos, you're Orthodox. And if you don't keep Shabbos, you're not. So I would think it's not true. I think the best this difference is Taras Mishpacha, family purity. He says, you know why? Because for a non-Orthodox Jew, they can't imagine in a million years that anyone's going to tell them what to do in the bedroom. I mean, like, this area of life, get out of my, no way! You know, the laws of privacy, the Constitution, you know what privacy, for those who didn't go to law school, you know what all the privacy laws are? It's like, there's nothing more private than that. No one's telling me what to do. And for an Orthodox Jew who looks to God in the holiest of holiest of areas, like, how could God not tell me at all? Right? A person who has a connection, how could there not be anything there? Right? She said, if you look at the Weltanschauung on the world view between an observant Jew, that should be the greatest difference. Right? So, but there's a natural, even for Orthodox, observant, traditional Jews, at any level, there's a certain amount to feel like adkan. You know, I can see, I know when I'm discussing people, I can like feel vibes like, oh no, why is Tommy this? Like, what does he want from me? Like, don't shoot their messenger. You know, like, I'm not making anything up. Right? But what's the feeling? The feeling is, this is my life. And that feeling is, not only it could be felt, you know, that vibe is not only against a rabbi, Rabbitson, it's even Hashem. Right? It's like, what does Hashem want from me at this level? I don't want to do this. I cannot do this. This is just beyond me, not for me. And I hear this all the time from observant Jews. Not always is it articulated that way. It's not said that. No one says that. But the subconscious message is that. It's like, this is just not for me. Right? It's just like, I no way. I cannot do that. There's a certain feeling of when you push yourself too much, it becomes counterproductive because you collapse completely. Right? Let's go back. You do chesed. Someone, I had a conversation with someone not that long ago, but a little bit long. You know, not that recently. So they're doing chesed, doing really good. Then they burnt out. I can't do, like, now I do nothing. Right? Nothing. I met people, a guy tells me, you know, this is a person who tried to become observant too quickly. Not from here. Started doing observance. It was too much. Gave it all up. Where is that coming from? There's a feeling of rebellion. I mean, I can't do this. It's just not for me. I can't tell this story. But there was a similar story. I was speaking to somebody, like about, you know, treating somebody correctly, and it's not even that they didn't even want to do it because it's not for me. It's like, this is not for me. Now, when they were saying it's not for me, they didn't want to get near it about being kind to another person. Happen to be the person's spouse. But you know, they don't be near it in a certain way because I'll only be this kind. I'll only do this much. There's a certain feeling of rebellion. So if your person's pushing, let me give you an example. If I see a person come to the shul, right, they're not observant. All of a sudden, within 2 weeks, their Shabbos kosher, right, the lady who came with a tank top and a mini skirt is now wearing a long skirt and a sheitel. I mean, I something's wrong here. You know why? Because she's either unstable or she's going to explode. I mean, it doesn't happen that way, right? I mean, it just doesn't. You know why? What? No, it happens. When a person is comfortable, like, you know, if a person does that, gets it over a year or two, I think that's fantastic. But if a person does it in such a quick manner, right, the problem is that one day they're going to wake up and say, what did I do to myself? I can't believe this. Like, right? So if a person takes on too much, someone says they want to daven Shachris Mincha and Maariv. Okay? A lady. She's not davening anything. Starts davening Shachris. How beautiful. And Maariv. Not even obligated. Shachris Mincha and Maariv. So what could happen? So her schedule, in the beginning, it's great in this, but her schedule gets tight. The kids get this. So this happens and like it becomes a burden. It becomes a burden. Okay. I can tell you honestly, I think I have a few stringencies. I don't think anything's a burden. It's a joy. There are things I could know if I did, it would be a burden. I can tell you, I don't, you know, it's, but what I do in life, it's a joy. I don't do anything to me, it's a burden. Now, there are things when I start out, they're a stretch. But it's not a burden. If somebody's living Judaism as a burden, you're taking things on and become a burden, that means something was misapplied. Right? It should be a joy. So the problem that becomes a burden is that you'll rebel against it completely. There's a danger. That's the first cliff. So he says like this, Rav Dessler, or Rav Volbo, Miat Navin, Masha Inenu Royin Kalapanim. You see people, and they start working on themselves. Good people working. What better thing in life could there be than a Jew living, applying, becoming better? Whether it's, again, interpersonal relationships, whether it's between their prayer, whether it's on Shabbos. Hey, we can all work on Shabbos. Each one of us at the table can work on Shabbos. To keep Shabbos holier, happier, right? To live Shabbos. Right? Shabbos should metamorphose as a week. So how are we going to improve our Shabbos? Whatever it may be. So we don't work on ourselves. You see people work on themselves. You call them precious people, a person who works on themselves, who breaks the law of inertia, who doesn't want to be mediocre, doesn't want to follow a script, is striving to be a better individual. So, they do it haphazardly, and they're not successful. Oh, that becomes too much of a burden. Because they take something on in other areas, they lose out in other areas, right? The person dominating 3 times a day, meanwhile her kids are crying, right? She's getting into fights with her husband because she's stressed out, right? So there's a loss in other areas. It means the person may enjoy it. I love dominating 3 times a day. Meanwhile, the person's life is in shambles, right? You know, the kids are starving or under, you know, the husband scared to get next to his wife because she's stressed out. I mean, it's not a burden for her, but, you know, everything else became a burden because of that. I mean, everything becomes off kilter. Osha Sivo Taival Tavas. The person says, you know what? I'm not going to do this thing. I'm not going to eat cake. I'm not going to indulge in this thing, or I'm not going to partake in this. And what happens is they're not ready for that. And on the contrary, it just increases the desire for that thing. Hey, abstaining then is the exact thing which is leading you to crave it even more. Okay, because you're not ready. I remember years ago, I was speaking to somebody who was living with, in an unobserving lifestyle, a young gentleman, and he says to me, he can't imagine giving up girls. A college boy. This guy, by the way, today is married with like 6 or 7 kids in a very religious neighborhood in the United States of America. And he's a very religious individual. And can never imagine ever getting near that lifestyle in which he was. I mean, never. By the time, like, if he would have removed from it immediately, he would have, like, boomeranged the other way because he wasn't ready for it. So abstaining at that point, going cold turkey, as you said, would have only increased his desires and not minimized his desires because it's cold turkey. So not, right, as a general rule. So a person, gives an example, a person takes a tinus dibur. Does anyone know what a tinus dibur is? Tinus dibur is what great righteous people do. It means they abstain from speaking anything but Torah for a period of time. Period. I mean, there are big tzaddikim, tzaddikim, really righteous people, men and women, who did it, who've done this. Okay, they don't speak only Torah. Now, you have to know what you're getting in the situation, if this is applicable. I can only imagine, like, you know, my wife doing with my kids, you know, doing my homework. You know, what's, you know, what would really be applicable? So you have to know your station of life. People who did do this, or people who were, you know, who's were able to do it. They were, you know, to be able to do it. Sometimes people do it for even an hour or 2 hours a day. Don't do it a whole day. Don't do it for a whole week. I know a person who used to do it from Elul through Yom Kippur. I don't know. I would not speak one word besides Torah from Elul to Yom Kippur. That's 40 days. 40 days. I mean, that's a long time. So, because I got an Atz Taz Dibur. Now, somebody takes a Tanis Dibur, and they feel like they haven't spoke for 2 days, for 2 days. They're calling everyone on the phone, they're like so happy to speak, and then they're talking to everyone all day long. So, why would you not take a Tanis Dibur, by the way? Why do certain righteous people do it? Because they don't want to waste their words, they don't want to waste their time, they want a spiritual focus. It's a spiritual exercise for very great people. So this person did it, and they'll end up just the opposite. Right? Just the opposite. And after the Tanis Dibur, they go to a lower level because they restrain themselves. So Rav Dessler actually compares this, he quotes Rav Dessler, to a spring. If you're on your spring, as long as you're pushing it down, it's good, but the minute you get up, it's going to come bouncing up. So if you do things too quickly or too haphazardly, the first danger is rebellion. The second danger, the second cliff of when you're working on Musar, is gaiva, arrogance. When you're, it's almost a natural thing, if you're doing something and other people are not, that you feel better. That you feel better. A friend of mine told me that his cousin was in a great yeshiva, and in this yeshiva was a real Lithuanian yeshiva. Very Lithuanian yeshiva. And they did not let the single boys have beards. Okay? Absolutely forbidden. This boy happened to come from a Hasidic background. So he asked one of the great, great Rosh Hashivas, could he grow a beard? So he made an exception for this boy. He can grow a beard, even though this was a Lithuanian yeshiva, they didn't want it. But he told him one thing. On condition, with less worry about the boy growing the beard, but he said, on condition that you don't think you're better than the boys who don't have it. You know why? Because if you're doing something and somebody else is not, there's a natural feeling that I'm better. But I do the chesed. I say to Hillel, I am patient. Right? How about this? Three people at a table. Three people here know this. One person's patient. One person's a nervous wreck. You know? And one person's half stressed. Right? It's, you know, you're looking at yourself, I'm calm. You may not articulate it, you may not express it, but you feel like, I'm better. I don't want to say it, you know what I mean? You know, give a little beat. I there's a feeling, especially when you're working in something, when you're looking for the feeling that you're doing good things. I can't tell you, you know, you hear people like, I do this, why can't this person do this? Or, I'm the person who is the giving person. I'm the caring. I keep Shabbos, and this one does not. Right? You feel, accomplished. And that accomplishment can lead you to feel that I'm better than person number two. There's a danger when a person's working on themselves, right, making efforts, that working on oneself could actually lead to arrogance. So Rav Volbit says that these are the two peaks, the two cliffs that you go between in life when you're growing. So here we're actually making the effort, right? But like any person, you know, you have to know cost benefit analysis, like, and how to apply things in life. Hey, even when you're trying to do great things and you're leaving inertia and you're leaving the world in mediocre, there is a dangers involved, right? The dangers on one side is when you push yourself a little bit, you could end up rebelling and regressing. And number two is you could become better in certain areas, and that betterness, that superiority, could actually lead to a terrible trait called arrogance, right? Gaiva. So having this in mind, Rolo then continues. And this is where we really start to get more in depth. That was just context. This parak, and we're not going to actually start the midas, which we'll do next week. It's called Maisim Katanim. Small things. Small steps. Small deeds. Now we're coming to the first foundation of service of Hashem. Meaning an Evid Hashem. Being a person who works on themselves. Ketzad oivdim toich akifas koyach hamir. How do we work on ourselves that it shouldn't boomerang, that it shouldn't pull us down? Right? How do we make the effort that our avoida is something that takes us from level to level, and not something that we start getting more observant and then less observant, right? Or more careful, and that we can't handle it. Rabbi Seinu Bibes Midrasho, great leaders who came from the school of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who was the founder of the Muslim movement, leader of my little Yisrael, is named after Yisrael Salanter. So they taught us the value of Maisim Ketanim, of small deeds. Right? Of small deeds, of the way that we take the internal world and start concretizing it, and not by going from 0 to 100. But it's like the Rambam says, giving a dot. Can you imagine a guy's not giving charity? He says, I want to break my stinginess. So the next day he gives $1,000, and the second day $1,000. I mean, he's going to have a heart attack. And then, the next 5 years, he's not going to give. You know, I can't believe I gave all that money. I know about a couple people exactly like this. They're still kicking themselves while they gave charity. And one guy in particular, he still tells me, like, I gave this 18 years, I can't believe it. If you had this guy given $50, you'd probably give him $10,000 a shot now, because he could. Right? But he went too quickly, too fast, and he regrets it. So how do you do it? Through Maisim Ketanim. Taking small, baby steps consistently. Consistently. And it gives a few examples how you see in the liturgy and in the words of our sages exactly the importance of the small things. For example, it says in Avos, in Ethics of Our Fathers, "Have a zar b'mitzvah kala k'bachamura, she'en ata yodei matan s'char and shos." Be careful with the small things, like you're the great things, because you don't know the reward of mitzvahs. Ma rav tuvcho, how great is your goodnesses? Ze s'charon shomitzvah kalas. That's the reward of mitzvahs kalas, of small, doing the small things. Also it says, v'haya ekev tishmon, im ha-mitzvahs ha-kalas sh'adam dash ba'akevav, tishmon, v'shamar Hashem. If you do the small things, then you'll come to hear Hashem. Right? So Amar Reish Lakish, who was a great 3rd century sage, so he says as follows, that if you step on small things, it's going to surround you. If the small things that we don't take advantage of this world, they're going to be up by at the time of judgment. You know why? Because those are the small things we could have built ourselves off. Right? Because we could have used those as stepping stools to become a little bit better. Bo'ilim Zair, in our small world, we find ourselves, we think as far as reward, punishment. Follow pelahu, right? It's an unbelievable thing. And ragilim kol kach lahagdil ulahadir es oilam hatorv v'mitzvus. We, you know, I can tell you again. I pick recently observant people. I'll tell you why. Because as somebody who came from a yeshiva background, like in the yeshiva world, it works a little bit differently. There, the mediocrity is the breaking of that shell is a little bit different. It's just a different. Because you're in the yeshiva, you feel, I'm doing yeshiva all day. So, and you can just follow the flow, you know, the mid-level of the yeshiva, you can follow it, or a girl's seminary. You can say, I'm doing what everyone else does, and you're religious, you can be Haredi, Yeshivish, Hasidish, whatever you want, and you just follow the flow, and you're just a mediocre religious Jew. You know, I've met plenty of mediocre Chabad people, plenty of mediocre Samar people, plenty of mediocre Lakewood people, and I figure, right? Plenty of mediocre people with Shugaz, it just, they're doing what everyone else does. It's very easy to do that in yeshiva. But when you're becoming observant, okay, so everything's fresh. So the growth pattern is a little bit different, okay? So you're like, you look, and so how do you see the world? People see the big things. You know, Shabbos as on a macro level, kosher on a macro level, having a family on a macro level, and this is fantastic because the secular world is bereft of all of these things. Right, it's bereft. It rings shallow. So for people becoming observant, who you know they went to Penn and Friday night was getting drunk and doing things of ill repute. Like Friday night now becomes a different galaxy. Right? I mean, so we look at things on a macro level. So we think, oh, this is great. I look at the world of Torah mitzvahs, right? And then all the big things. When it comes to the details, small things. On achieving, making Shabbos on every level Shabbos, right? Being careful on kashrus, not just getting married, you know, unbelievable. I taught for Aisha Torah in Philadelphia. So you would meet, you know, the products of liberal society. These attorneys, these ladies would be like literally hedge fund managers, attorneys who went to good schools like University of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, and a successful attorney. And they're 38, 39 years old. And they are partners in these law firms. And all of a sudden, they see families, they start going to Shabbos. And like, there's like a mad rush to get married. I mean, these ladies couldn't imagine to get married, let alone starting a family. Like, they have like a mad rush to get married and a mad rush to have kids. It's like, literally, like, bam! Like they realize, what am I doing in my life? Like, there's so much more richer that I can be doing for myself. I can be. So what happens though? The focus is getting married, have kids. How many people after they get married, or after the kids, literally think not how to deal with crises, right? But we're happily married. How am I going to make my marriage better? Like, how am I going to make my marriage holier? Right, how am I going to make my kids better? Not that many. And if they do, it's when things go wrong or some kind of traumatic event happens. Something startles the person. Most people, once they get the macro level, right, you keep Shabbos. People keep Shabbos. I very rarely, when people are becoming observant, I hear people ask me questions about Shabbos. Very rarely do I hear an observant person accepting halacha, which is good. I mean, you can't keep Shabbos without knowing halacha, without knowing Jewish law. But how do I, should I sing the mirrors? Should I do this? How do I do Shabbos better? Most people who are Sabbath observant Jews are satisfied with their Sabbath. Great, I keep Shabbos. I have the macro. There's not, you know, the Chavetz Chaim. Everyone heard of the Chavetz Chaim? Have you ever heard of the Chavetz Chaim? The biggest tzaddik in the past 150 years. Chavetz Chaim. We work on his Shabbos. He kept Shabbos, by the way. He wrote the book. Right? He wrote the Mishnah Berurah. You think he knew the laws backwards and forwards? I guarantee you he knew Einstein's mirrors. What does it mean he worked on Shabbos? It means that he worked to make his Shabbos richer. Even though he was the Chavetz Chaim. And he wasn't satisfied with the Shabbos. How did the Chavetz Chaim work on Shabbos? Do you think he took huge steps? No, he took small incremental things to make it better. Right? Small incremental things. That's what, because that's how you do it. And that's, most people don't do it. That the Chochmah of Binyan Ha'adam is the small steps. It's taking small steps, which take us from step to step. Gama Oilam Ha'gadol in a Nivna. The way we get to places is not by these great giant steps which we're not necessarily ready for. ma'atumim koziirim she'em b'koach ha'ayin la'afas. Taking incremental steps, right? Taking small things which make it better. For example, if you wanted to work on Shabbos, if you worked on doing 50 things at once, you're not going to do it. But if you say like this, I'm going to work on my Shabbos. How will I work on Shabbos? Candle lighting. I'm going to stay with my candles. And when my candles, I usually don't say a prayer for Shabbos. I'll make a prayer for Shabbos. Or I'll do something by my candle lighting. I'll be dressed by candle lighting. I'll be wearing my Shabbos clothes, all dressed for Shabbos, by candle lighting. And that's how, and you do that for 40 weeks, 30 weeks. And then you say to yourself, the next week, I'm going to have the 40 weeks later, I'm going to have my table set. Like, it may be applicable for some, an hour and a half before Shabbos. I'm going to have my table set. Shabbos will be in my house even earlier. And you do that for 40 weeks. Right? So you're taking things incrementally, right, and getting there to make, transform Shabbos in your house. Right? But imagine, I want to improve my Shabbos. Right? So until this week, literally 18 minutes before Shabbos, you run, you're still wearing your denim skirts, and, you know, house is a mess. Right? You're stressed out. You light candles. This week, no. I'm going to light candles. I'm going to be dressed. I'm going to sing all those mirrors. I'm going to learn the whole parsha of the whole Shabbos. Right? I'm going to tell my kids to not talk about the elections unless they speak about Mitt Romney. No. So even Mitt Romney, you can't talk about the elections at all. My husband says one word that's not Torah, he's in big trouble. And my we're going to have Shabbos! I mean, you can imagine the house. It would feel like Shabbos. I mean, people, the kids, no one knows to do themselves. They'll be scared to walk in the house. It won't be Shabbos. It'll be a terror zone. You're stressed out. It won't be real. But there are people who actually live that way, by the way, that they would never talk about politics on Shabbos. Not because they're not interested, because it's Shabbos. Imagine it, your wedding night, you know, someone's getting married. Who are you voting for? Like, imagine at your wedding night, you know, didn't the Oakland A's just sweep the World Series, right?
Yeah.
So Giants, right?
Giants.
I know. Right. So, like, would you, even if you like it, would you talk about it? You know, you get into the Yichud room. How about those Giants? Like, are you out of your mind? You know. So, again, I think most people are not holding that by Shabbos, but there are people who are. And you know how they got there? They live Shabbos. Right? Because to them, Shabbos is a wedding. You know, it's so important, so holy, so fantastic. If they're disinterested right now. They may be interested. The person after his wedding is going to be an Oakland A's fan or a Giants fan. Right? But right now they're not. We know why. Because they're focused on Shabbos. But the way a person's going to get there is not by artificial means. It's by, you know, working up to whatever level it's going to be. And it's the small deeds. The way we build ourselves and whatever we're going to work on, it's going to be consistent and it's going to be small, or even say baby steps. Realistic, that's the... I would define it as slight tension. When you want to improve or get better, it has to be slight tension. Ever so slight. If there's no tension, that means you're not actually exerting yourself. If it's too much, you're already at the point of snapping, right? There's a theory of elasticity. Right? If you go too far, you snap. Now, even when you're doing this, right, if you're doing it small steps, it's going to become ingrained. You're not going to become arrogant that way. Because you yourself are just building yourself up slowly. Yidia Zeis, right? Now, think about everyone at this table. Whatever we want to work on, we all have things. This is how we do it. We're not going to just talk about it. We're going to do it with small steps. Right? If a person is an angry person, they're not going to be calm, cold turkey. A person is a sad person. They're not going to be happy just going from extreme to extreme. It doesn't work that way. It's not real. Right? You do it little things. Little things. Right? If you want to become patient, drop a patience. That's how you do it. This is a completely different change in how we grow. Right? Now, some people, the elasticity comes very quickly. Like, there are people who can go in certain areas very quickly. That's just they're naturally inclined that way. So, I'll give an example. Again, people becoming observant. They can take on certain things, people can take on certain things very, very quickly, and other things very, very slowly. Because they have no tension on the thing they get quickly. There are people who, for ladies, who become tsnius right away. You know why? Because they're naturally tsnius. It's not hard for them. Like, on the contrary, they're more well-groomed for that. But, I actually had a lady, this is unbelievable, San Jose, like, literally asked me, she was like so from, but she had a Yetzirah to pull dry skin off on Shabbos. Like, it would bother her. So she would ask me, I think that's like, for most people, if they come observant, like, you know, how hard is that? Like, for this person, it was hard. Like, it was a struggle for the other things people would wish it would be like her. But for this, so you have to work with the person on how not do that. Right? You can't pull dry skin off on Shabbos. That's forbidden. Right? But for this person, it was a challenge. So people react differently. But wherever we are, we have tension points. Yeah? And obviously, any growth is personal. Right? There's no one in this room who's going to have the same difficulties, same tensions, same pressures, same life story. Right? It's all going to be different. So it's going to be personal for us. We think, you know, of this great book, this great methodology, this fantastic, you know, in 40 days you'll become from, you know, manic maniac to happy individual. Like, you know, your marriage can be solved in one day. You know, like, you know, piece of cake. You know, all of a sudden you're going to go from this. I mean, that's how people work in this day. Oh, we have this great system that will just make us into the person we want to be. Right, you buy this book, this tape series, this psychologist, this diet, it all automatically. Right, that's the world we live in. We think, he says, even if you talk about peace talks, you have a great organization, they do great things, and there's no focus on the small. Right? On the contrary, you have small, 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 you work up to the big things. Right? If you have lots of small steps, then actually the big becomes a natural, as opposed to the superficial. Right? And it becomes real. Right? If a person wants to work on something, the way you do it is by becoming big. So he actually gives a marshal, right, that after the Yom Kippur War, he flew to the Egyptian border. The Egyptian border after the Yom Kippur War is by Sinai. They actually were all the way in Sinai. So he said he was on a flight. He was going to speak to the army to give them words of encouragement. So the Israeli plane that was flying near the Egyptian border, which is by the canal there, so it flew very, Israeli plane flew very low. So he asked the plane guy, why are you flying so low? So he said, it's never good for a Jewish plane to be with an Egyptian radar. Right? So we fly low, we're out of radar. So he says, if you fly low, you take small steps, you're out of the radar of rebellion. A person rebels is when they're not ready. Right? A person regresses, springs backwards, is when they're not ready. But if you take a small step on the level we can, then it becomes real. Right? And by the way, this doesn't only apply to us. If you want to get your spouses, your children, people to change, the way you do it is not, doesn't work that way. It's not going to work that way for most people. And it certainly won't work for everyone on every level that way. I mean, everyone has levels that they have to go slow. Actually, some people can go quickly in certain things. But most people need to take it slow. But if they do it consistently, right? If you have, I have a child. I can't get this kid to put things away. So if I tell them, put everything away. No, so I remind them once they only put this away. They do that for the next 25 weeks. And then I'll get them to the next thing. So start getting used to doing it. You're not going to get somebody, you know, hope all the wives here can work on the wives, get their husbands 3 minutes a day. So let's imagine, no one here, you know, I can't imagine such a thing. Their husband comes 10:30 Shabbos day. And that's it. Okay? 10:30 Shabbos day once a week. No one here. Chas v'shalom. What kind of husband does that? Right? So now he says, I'm going to change my husband. Spouse? Shachris? Micha? Myriv? 7 days a week. How many think you would be successful in that strategy? Anybody? Right? Now, it's very, you know what's the funny thing is? We know with our husbands or with our children or with our parents or we can't do that. But with ourselves, we imagine that. We imagine that we can do that. Like, we know when we have to push back for somebody else, it's not going to work that way. Now, if you actually want to get your husband to get there 7 days a week, 3 times a day, I'll tell you how you do it. You get it. It's coming 10:30. Tell him 9:30. Be back for the Torah. Right? Come by 9:30. Get him to come for 9:30 for 20 straight weeks. Really, get him to 9:30. Then you push him to 9. Don't tell him I said this, by the way. Right? This is a strategy. We'll do the strategy. Then you get him to 9. Right? 20, 30 straight weeks. Then you get him to 8:30. He's on time. Shabbos morning, 8:30 is on time every time. We'll talk about Andy's class at different times. Okay? You got it at 8:30 for a year. So now you say, oh, by the way, I want to go to Shal Shuddis Mincha. Can go to Mincha. Hey, work it up. You're not going to get the guy to change by pushing. You do it incrementally. And then, you know, and by the way, some husbands, they like it, they'll take it on themselves without you asking. They'll say, oh, you know what? I'm going to come for Mincha. I'm going to come for my. Some people start saying, I'll come every day. I've had people like that here. And then, and that same person, by the way, who go like that to Minyanim Hav, his own area, we have to really struggle with, because everyone has struggles. Every human being. That's the point of life. But how do we work on our struggles? We do it with incremental steps. Consistent, slight tension, but doing it. Not just talking about it, not expecting that today I'm impatient, today I'm depressed or negative. I think I'll protect the negative people. Just today, I'll tell you honest, I was thinking myself negatively about something. I was like in the middle of after I was done, like, why do I think negatively? I can think positively about this. Like, it was like something so irrelevant. But, you know, thinking negative is for many people natural. That's their mode of operation. Negative. So how is a negative person become positive? You think they can become positive just like that? No way. You're a negative thinker, it doesn't go. So you train yourself on small steps. So everyone's different how they would do that. But my point is, I'm not doing that right now. But if you want to get out of negativity, right, you'll start figuring out a little bit. Every time you'll say a positive thought. For every negative, it may not even affect you that much, but you'll do a positive thought. And maybe even be artificial. And then you'll do more and more and more and more until your mind frame starts changing. And it could take years for that person, if that's a challenge in life. Right? But that's growth. You know, Moshe Feinstein, somebody once, you know, slammed a door in his finger. And he didn't react. Somebody asked, and he literally, I mean, most people slam the door in the finger. You know, at least they can scream out, they may not scream at the other person. Most people scream at the other person, like, you, what's the word, idiot? Yeah, you idiot! You know, you, be careful! Or they'll be holy. Be careful, you know, you really hurt me. They don't probably call a name. Or, you know, they'll say, ah, it really hurt, but don't worry about it, you know? You know, and they're angry inside. So her Misha was, somebody asked her, Misha, Rebbe, you know, how do you not get angry? How do you not get angry? So, he said, you know, I'm 80 years old, I worked my whole life, he said, when I was younger, I got angry. It took me years. Actually, the author of this book, Rev Leuchter, who's a big student of Volva, said the following story. Said that he's in yeshiva, he's a student of Volba, and he came running through like these type of doors, you know, a push door, and there's no window, you know, like in the yeshiva, the door was just, there was no window, just the door. And he came running through, and he pushed the door open, and he hit into the Revolba, who was about 75, and slammed in the back. So, Revolba's walking in the back. What would most of us do? We would either jump on the guy, say, lecture them, be careful, or turn around, give a dirty look, or a surprise look. Volvo, he said, did not turn around. He said, this is unbelievable. He said he got slammed in the back, like that. He didn't turn around, he just kept walking. He didn't want to embarrass whoever the student was. But how in the world is something called like that? I mean, right, know how? Because he's worked a lifetime of work. That was not like that. That was a person who's 70 years old, the author of this book, who's talking about doing deeds in incremental fashion. And working on himself till that became his natural reaction. So he says that this is the first thing. Moshe, we shouldn't do things which are burden ours. Call out Jacob Meister and Atzir Prokhamei. He says everything we'll discuss in the Prokhamei ahead. He says that the key is to do small deeds which become part of our nature and change ourselves, and that we don't add things that. Even from things, right, which are going to burden us or make us not naturally look down on other people. He then recommends that all these vadim you should implement. The best way to implement is not to do responsibilities, but to have somebody ideally to work on. So this is all context for the weeks ahead. Actually, we'll probably do two things at a time. And we'll probably next go into just one, and then we'll work on it. And really the goal is going to be taking a large topic. I haven't decided between two things what to start with. But let's say it would be chesed, and saying, how will I apply chesed, or anger? How will I apply anger into my life, not to be angry, obviously, and have it on small levels, and have, we'll talk about in the class the intellectual world and applying it, and the goal would be for that week actually applying it in a small way, because, you know, even when I lecture, hopefully someone takes a small kernel and applies it to their life, because you can't, you know, that's the key of life. I take anything small and remembering that life and Jewish life is not about being mediocre. Jewish life is not about being static. It's about working on yourself. But even when we make the effort to leave the laws of inertia, there's these two cliffs that we have to go between. On one hand, if we go too quick, take too big steps, we become rebel, we have a loss. Or number two, that we can become arrogant, okay? Self-important in our own eyes, which is just as bad. Okay, thank you.
Okay, question.
Yes.
So how do we understand the Rambam's rule of, you know, if you go a certain, you should go to the other extreme in order to get to the golden median? You know?
This is a very good, important question. So, go to the other extreme. So the Rambam says like this. If you, let's say a person is very, very stingy. I pick stingy, mm-hmm. So how do you get the other way? By going to the other extreme. But even in the Rambam, it means you can take incremental steps, go a little bit to the other way to uproot it, and then come back. You still can't go immediately to the other extreme. So again, a guy is stingy, right? So you'll give a dollar to everyone you see. Now, in real life, people ask me all the time questions of tzedakah. I don't tell them to give to everyone a lot of money. I say, there's a certain rule of tzedakah. You can say no, you can say yes, you have to be a charitable person. Right? There's all kinds of halachas. But a person who wants to uproot a person himself on will incrementally get himself for a while into an area which is super duper, right? Overcompensating in order that when they balance out, right? That's how it works.
I thought we were supposed to think about if something happens, like you get slammed in the back, you sort of think it didn't come from that guy, it came from Shemaim. What am I supposed to be doing? Like, it sounds strange not to react. You get slammed in the back, we should think maybe, you know, what is this supposed to teach me? What am I supposed to...
Well, there could be multiple. Listen, I was giving an example of a person who's a very fine level. In that particular case, the point of teaching is Rav Elbe, I'm sure, thought it's a patra, but he was more concerned that this student would be humiliated the next time he saw him, right?
Okay.
And he didn't want the student to feel bad. He wasn't worried about himself. His thought is the student. And so he was a person whose whole focus was on other people and not on himself. Most of us, you know, you hit the back, you think, my back hurts, you know, that's natural, by the way. That's a very, very lofty level. I mean, that's a particular case, but you know, that would be that. Any other questions?
The Am Yeshua is not authored by Rabbi Wolbe?
It is.
Oh, but you said there was another author? I misunderstood.
No.
No.
Maybe I was unclear, but he's the author. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Ashur is actually from the Pasuk by Yosef. It's above the eye, like you can see above, a lofty vision.
Uh-huh.
Right? We're looking for, this is like a lofty vision. Right? Because again, the point of Musar and of Torah is to have a lofty vision, not to be self-complacent, but to grow. And that's really the point of this series. Okay, hold here.